it's obvious that when these two team up, the result is magical.
This Week in Tennis.
And we brought this dynamic duo together once again.
Welcome to This Week in Tennis.
Welcome to This Week in Tennis. My name's Phil Nasons. He's Craig Doyle. And we are here to preview the French Open. What's up, boy? How are you?
It's been a little while, hasn't it?
A little while, boy.
Life taking over, too many injuries, getting old, but I haven't even played too much of this clay court season that we're going to talk about today because we're coming up to the big one in the clay court season at the French Open. But I'm good, and I'm looking forward to this. And we're going to get ourselves ready to launch into that grass court season in a few weeks. But this is a special edition of the show. Trying to get ourselves back into a routine. It's been a difficult season, hasn't it?
Oh, it sure has. You know what? I returned to tennis, and then I tore my plantar fasciitis, so I'm no longer in tennis. It is what it is. What a career, though. 38 years. Wow. Internationally, regionally, it's been a great run. But I'm glad to be here with you, because this has been a great run, too. You and I have been doing this for 11 years now. It's been an incredible ride, and we are going to be back. I have to travel next week in order to have surgery, but we'll be doing something maybe Thursday before I go on Friday. We'll see, but it's great to be here with you. It's great to be here with our listening audience who've been after us for weeks now. What's going on? What are you going to do? You know, well, guess what? We're here, and we're relatively healthy. Apparently, the microphones all work. You know, it was interesting, Craig. I plugged my microphone in, and the cable has one of those funny shorts in it. So I got it set up perfectly today. And I'm looking forward to talking about Roland Garros. I know that you personally prefer Wimbledon, as do I. The grass court season. We'll have a lot to talk about there. But what do you think about the uproar over the men's draw, specifically the top half of the draw, which features, and this is top heavy, Novak Djokovic is in there, Carlos Alcaraz is in there, Rafael Nadal, and then there's some others in there too, Diego Schwartzman, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and Alexander Zverev. You're looking at most of the favorites right there, Craig. In the top half, you're looking at a possibility, no less, of a Djokovic-Nadal quarterfinal. And I wonder what you think about all that from a tennis standpoint and, of course, from the betting standpoint.
It's going to be interesting. You know, every year we go on, some of these heavy hitters that we have known over the last 15 years get that little bit older, and there's some new names on the scene that are appear that could cause them problems. A lot of people are talking about, and rightly so, Carlos Alcaraz. A lot of people are talking about Novak Djokovic because he won a tournament last week in Rome. There's a lot of interest, there's a lot of intrigue, and as you pointed out, it's a lot of it sits in this top half. And that, from the betting standpoint, is very difficult. It would have been nicer for us to have them spread out a little bit across both halves of the draw. But certainly we've got a draw here where the top half's a lot heavier looking than the bottom half. But that'll, you know, open up opportunities for some players in the bottom half to go on the run. So if we're looking for some real clay court players in that bottom half, I mean, Jannik Sinner is probably one that sticks out to me. That's a guy who's in the bottom half. He could go on a good run. He's 11th seed. He's not looking at facing anyone too taxing in the early rounds. Then that guy could go to the semifinals or the finals. That's how this draw's worked out.
It certainly has. You know, and if you're Stefanos Tsitsipas, who reached the final last season and got buried by Novak Djokovic in the Rome final, you got to be thinking to yourself, I've got a clear shot at another final appearance. I mean, but there's the uproar I don't find even credible, really. From a betting standpoint, it sucks. But most of these people complaining on Twitter or wherever obviously have never hosted a tennis tournament in their lives, because you don't do things like that. A lot of people think that they're going to be, that it was fixed, it was rigged, but no tournament director.
Understand how this works. I mean, it's a draw. That's the concept of a draw, is it's not fixed. You know, they put the people in based on the seeding, and then it's a draw. You know, that you don't get to choose which half of the draw you're in unless you're the top seed or the second seed. You know, the third and fourth seed don't get to decide which half of the draw they're in. Other people don't get to decide where they're in the draw. It's a draw. You know, it's fair. There's no fix. There's no match fixing to ensure certain matches are on. I think a lot of people in this day and age, they just want something to complain about.
I think so. And obviously, they've never hosted a tennis tournament or been a director, because this is a director's nightmare. No one wants to see Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal play against each other in the quarterfinals. In fact, most tournament directors I know, including myself, would have preferred to have them on one in one side of the draw and one in the other, you know, and space them out that way. But that's what it is, a draw. And those names came out fairly and honestly, and this is what we have. And if you don't like it, you know what? You're free to change the channel at any point you wish, because that's the way these things have been going for years and years. Now, I understand the argument about automatically placing seeds into the draw. I get that part, you know, but at the end of the day, rankings matter. And if you don't have the rankings, then you're going to get stuck, or the ranking points, I'm sorry, you're going to be stuck in bad draws like this. But to be honest with you, I don't think the winner's coming from the first half of from the top half of the draw. I think it's going to be a nightmare for anyone to get through that. But a lot of people have been talking about Carlos Alcaraz, and he's been Herculean, and he's a 2-1 favorite, or a 2-1 underdog, to win this event. Does he have a shot at winning this thing in that kind of draw?
Yeah, you know, he's got a good shot of winning it, because he's young and he seems to be playing well on the clay. He's on a real upward swing, but you've got to look at it and say, why is this guy being favored to win over Rafael Nadal? I mean, Rafael Nadal has won this thing more times than most people can count to. So Alcaraz beats him in Madrid a couple of weeks ago in a court that's at high altitude. So you're hitting that ball, it's flying a lot faster than it flies in Paris. He's not beating him on a clay court. So had he beaten him in Rome, I think I would have been more inclined to think that there might be something there. But this is Nadal's house. This is like going to Nadal's house and beating him. Not too many people do that here. Over the years, we've seen a couple, but it's not often. You're going to have Nadal Djokovic. That's going to be a huge match. You could possibly have the winner of that one playing Alcaraz. Yeah, he's got a shot at getting there, but it's you got to win seven matches, and it's going to be seven tough matches to win as well. It's not going to be easy for somebody of his level of experience to come here and dominate the field with that kind of draw. I think the price you're being offered on him is completely ridiculous. It doesn't entice playing him to win. You know, I think, you know, how many Grand Slams has he won?
He's won none.
He ain't won any. You know, I don't know, has he won a Masters? Maybe he's won one of those. But this is Grand Slam tennis. This is best of five sets over 2 weeks. This is not something that he has experience of. At that price, for the number of Grand Slams he's got, you can't play that. That's not a play.
It's not a play at all. You know what? It's not a play at all. And 2-1, no, because it's going to be tough. You know, now he's gone from the hunter to the hunted. You know, everyone's talking about him. Novak Djokovic is a 1.8-1 favorite to win this. He's the favored player. I don't know. I think that that's probably a little bit off as well. Nadal is a 3.5-1. Tsitsipas is a 4.5-1. Casper Ruud is 18-1. Zverev is 20-1. Daniil Medvedev is 28-1, which
That's a good price. I like that price of Medvedev. I know he's traditionally not been great on this surface, but at 28-1, that's not a bad play because he's in the bottom half of the draw. So he's in the same half as Tsitsipas, and you're not getting good money on Tsitsipas because you're not going to tell me that you're going to play Tsitsipas at 4.5 to 1. That's, how many slams has he won? None. So we ain't going to play him at that price. But at 28 to 1 on a guy that's won a slam and is in the bottom half of the draw, that's not a bad price. I like that price. And are you going to tell me Yannick Sinner in a minute? Because he's in the bottom half of the draw as well. I might play him.
I'm not going to tell you that because I'm not so sure what he's going to do just yet. Boy, I love that kid, Yannick Sinner. What a game he has. But look at this. Zverev is 20 to 1. And he hasn't won anything either. And it's amazing how these numbers have come out. Sinner at 28 to 1, now that's not a bad shot. But can he get past Tsitsipas? That's the question. Can he get past Medvedev? That's the question. Can he get past Casper Ruud? That's the question. What about Andrei Rublev? He's in there also. That bottom half. And Denis Shapovalov is in there too. You've got these kids. None of them, with the exception of Medvedev, has won a major. This is a big chance for somebody down there. But the hardest part is going to be sorting out which one gets to the final. I think Tsitsipas will, but I'm not going to pay 4.5 to 1 to get there. I think that's a bad play. Sinner, good play. Medvedev, great play. And the reason for everything that you just said, he's won. He knows how to win. Supposedly, his game is geared to the clay. So we'll have to wait and see. But of all those players there that we've mentioned, Medvedev is the play. If you're going to make some money, Medvedev is your play to win this whole thing. And he has got a pretty interesting draw, I believe. Let's have a look and see who he plays. But I like Sinner, though, dude. I really like Sinner. But I'm just not so sure or convinced that he's going to get that done. And look at this. Where is this kid at?
So I've got Medvedev. He's right at the bottom of the draw. He plays Bagnis in the first round. Bagnis is a pretty awkward game because Bagnis, Argentinian, plays his thing. So Medvedev's going to have to get off the ground running. But then, the next couple of rounds, I don't really see anyone in there that's a top-tier clay player that would cause him problems. Even as far as getting to, I think like the first real challenge for him, if he gets through that first round, would be getting the fourth round stage where he might come up against Carino Busta, who, these Spanish players, they love this kind of surface.
Sure.
But at that point, he's already played 3 matches and he's going to be feeling pretty comfortable on the surface. So I'd, expect by that point he beds himself in and he's, by the time he gets to the second week, he's looking stronger. Which is why I think, if he was playing somebody really, really awkward in the first round, like Fognini or something like that, I'd be a little cautious. But he's not. He's playing someone he should beat comfortably. So I'm pretty confident that once he gets up to speed, he's going to take some real stopping going into the second week. So at the price that you're being offered at 28 to 1, I think it's just too good a price not to have a go.
Not to have a go. Bagnis is a nice player, though. But, the other thing, too, I think people need to consider is that these Russian players and these Belarus players, this is their last major until New York, so till the U.S. Open. They won't be allowed to play at Wimbledon. So there's a little more incentive there for them to go out there and do some crushing. But let's say this, Medvedev, That Bagnis match is going to be tough. But after that, he doesn't have a whole lot standing in his way until he gets to the semis.
Yeah, I think like he might come up against Sinner or someone around about that point, maybe the quarterfinal stage. But at that point, once you've played a few matches and you've got a few matches under your belt, things are different. You're not. The danger is always you turn up to clay and you haven't been playing particularly well and you get knocked out in the first round by someone who's just really, really solid. And I think he'll be okay. I think he's too good to go out to Bagnis in the first round. That would be a major shock if he lost to Bagnis. And I don't see anyone standing in his way for a few rounds. And by that point, I think he'll be fully up to speed. So this is a really great draw for him. And a great draw for anyone, you know, looking to bet on a guy at a good price.
And you'll get a good price. You know, when you talk about first round traps, Tsitsipas has a first round trap with Musetti. And Musetti is a good clay court player. Stefanos is a great clay court player. We've seen that. He hasn't won a major yet, but he's gotten closer than most. And what I would say is that's going to be the match right there. Because if he can get past that, he's got probably Puig or Michael Yeamer. This is the kind of draw, or maybe Dan Evans. This is the kind of draw like you dream about and keep your fingers crossed for, and you're looking at Tsitsipas with that. The other one here that I think is going to be interesting is Shapovalov Rune. I think that's going to be a more dangerous match than it looks. I don't think it's going to be as close as some appear it will be. I like this kid, this Rune. And Shapovalov, you like Shapovalov. Tell us why.
He's got a good all-round game. I think he's maybe a bit better on the hard courts than the clay, but I like him. He's aggressive. He's passionate. I quite enjoyed him shouting at the crowd the other day in Italy because, you know, that sort of thing gets you stabbed over there. particularly when you're playing against an Italian player, you don't want to be taking the mezzo back to your hotel. I can tell you that much.
That's for sure.
But yeah, you know, I think he's got a lot of assets there, but he's kind of like one of those unrefined diamonds. He needs a bit of polish. He needs to tighten up in a few areas. But he offers a lot of good stuff. I'm going to pick one out right here that's going to be a first round upset.
Okay.
Maybe not an upset, but your man, Tommy Paul.
Ooh.
Is seeded, and he's going to get smoked by the Chilean Christian Garin, who is a very, very good clay court player. There's only about two or three places between them in the rankings, but Tommy Paul has been seeded, and that's a terrible draw for him to draw Garin in the first round. And Garin, I think, might be one of the players that can go a little bit of distance in this tournament. He's playing against one of your favorites. The winner of that plays probably play one of your favorites in the second round, Benoit Paré. But it's that kind of section of the draw is the one that Rublev's in, and Garin would be the kind of player that I think will cause Rublev problems on the clay. So I think I'm going to play Garin quite a bit over the first few days and hope that he's shown the kind of form that he's shown previously on clay.
And then you've also got in between all those, between Per and Ivaska, and then you've got Rublev playing Kwan, you've got Mannarino taking on Delbonis.
Whoa, big first round match.
That's ugly. When you see that draw and you're Delbonis or Mannarino and you see the other guy, you're going, oh shit. You know, that's, oh boy. I hope I, my doubles partner and I do well, because this is going to go down as a quickie. You're going to look at five sets here. You're going to look at a war. I don't know who's going to win, but that's a tough match right there.
And whoever, I love Mannarino. Mannarino. What a great player.
He's a guy
that goes under the radar because he's not the guy who will win a slam, but he's a guy who will win rounds for you when you're backing him. And as you say, like, both those guys have probably looked at that and thought, oh, you know, could it not have been somebody else?
Yeah, could it have been anyone else? They've even taken the flags away from the Russians and the Belarusians. That's just not fair. I don't understand why they allow politics to get in the play in the way. But that bottom half is interesting. There's some definite traps involved. You know, we'll have some picks up on the daily for you over on BetStamp. You can find that link in the show notes, and you can get after it that way. But this top half, I was kind of dreading it. But the bottom line is, it's a nightmare. You know, Djokovic has to start this thing against Nishioka. That's not exactly the best kind of draw for him. And then, if he gets past there, and I suspect that he will, he's going to have to take on the winner of Korea and Molkan. And Molkan is being coached by Djokovic's former coach, longtime coach. So there's some things there, but Djokovic might have a couple pretty interesting matches. I'll tell you the match here that's going to be interesting, too, is Jensen Brooksby is taking on Cuevas, another Argentinian, right? And I think that that's going to be a difficult match for Brooksby to play. And I think Cuevas is going to be hoping for a lot of opportunities to pass Brooksby when he tries to come to the net. What do you like about that one? I think that one has got upset written all over it.
Yeah, I just don't like Americans on clay at all.
No.
You know, you guys, you don't grow up to play on the surface.
No.
You're looking at the likes of these guys like Cuevas. He's a Uruguayan. These guys do grow up playing on the surface, so it's just natural to them. I think any American who wins here is playing a real good game to get there. You know, I looked down this first half of the draw and I picked out Opelka's playing against Krajinic, I think.
Yeah,
and that is, you know, how many big serves is he going to get out of that one?
A lot of them. Krajinovic is a nice clay court player. He's going to get a lot of balls back.
That's what I mean. Like, if the guy gets a lot of balls back, Opelka's done, right? Because he can't really come and play serve and volley here. It's really difficult. I think this is going to be a real tough tournament for the American men in particular. I think that a lot of them are going to struggle to get through the first round. Maybe the best bet's Taylor Fritz. He's been playing some really nice stuff. He plays a qualifier in this top half of the draw. But, I look at up and down the list, and I'm like, I'm not fancy him playing too many American men early doors. Maybe Corder. Corder's playing up against Millman. That's a good matchup for Corder. But there's a high percentage of American casualties in the first round here, I think.
I see quite a few, actually. Rafael Nadal opens up his campaign against Jordan Thompson from Australia. I don't think that's going to be any issue at all. And also, they're talking about Rafael Nadal like he doesn't exist anymore, that he's not even...
He's had like a foot injury or something at the minute, but it'll take more than a foot injury for him to lose to Jordan Thompson, right?
Right.
It's going to be, you know, and that's no disrespect to Thompson. This is what Nadal does, and he's done for a decade and a half. It's going to take something pretty special to see Nadal away here, and it's not going to be from Thompson. It's probably not going to be from Mateo Wawrinka either. You know, if Nadal doesn't make... You know, Nadal's leg will have to fall off before he doesn't make it to the second week. That's kind of what we're looking at here.
They're judging him by his performance in Rome instead of his overall body of work.
Let's look at this one. Let me throw this one at you because it's quite interesting. Casper Ruud is playing against Joe Wilfried Tsonga in what will probably be Joe Wilfried Tsonga's last match, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think so?
Yes, I actually.
You don't see Tsonga springing an upset here?
No. No, I don't. If he does, that gives Tsitsipas another clear path. I don't know. He'll have the fan support for sure.
Just on that subject, I mean, it's nothing's been said, but Richard Gasquet is playing here. Gil Simon's playing here on a wild card. Is this the last throw of the dice for a lot of these French guys? Do you think this will be their last Roland Garros?
I don't know. I don't know. Gasquet seems to be playing pretty well. He's reached the semifinals of the event he's in this week. He's beat, you know, this funny thing is, this Gasquet, everyone talks about him like he's dirt too. He's got a win over every single player that's during his time that's been ranked either from 1 to 100. He's beaten them all. So, I mean, he's always got a chance. The problem with these guys, you know, I remember reading something about this collection of players, Simone, Tsonga, Gasquet, and they say these guys had no heart. And that was written by a French journalist. He said they made too much money coming up. The French Tennis Federation babied them, and they have no heart. And they haven't won anything. And I'm not so sure that this match, although I would not want to be Casper Ruud today, thinking I've got to play this guy, the fans are going to be there in abundance, and it's probably going to be on a big court because, you know, Tsonga is one of the faces of French tennis, or was for a very, very long time. You know, he was also a disappointing face. This is his last chance to save face, so to speak. He's definitely retiring. I don't know if I would have given him a wild card in this event, though. I don't know if he's done enough to earn it. But his entire body of work, I guess. I don't think he has a chance against Ruud. I don't believe Casper is going to lose. I would think that for Tsonga to win, he's going to have to win about 80% of his first serve points and 100% of his second serve points. Otherwise, this Rude kid is going to just carve him up like a Thanksgiving turkey. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? You actually have a feeling on this, I'm sure. What's up?
No, I think Songa's been out of gas for the last two or three years. You know, he's got a lot of injuries that he's been carrying. And I think the wild card, as you said, was more to do with his body of work over time than anything that he's done recently. I think people in France and around the world have probably enjoyed watching Joe Wilfried Tsonga for the last 15 years.
Or more.
He's come close to winning a slam. He's been in a final. He's been in the final of the end of season tour finals. He's done bits and pieces over the years. You and I have always said he probably hasn't maximized on the game that he has. He's probably just been comfortable with what he's doing, but he could have got a lot more from it. But I think this is one that's probably going to go on Chatrier or Lenglen, get a big audience, and you know, people can wave bye to Tsonga when he's done. That's kind of my feeling on it.
I think so. I think Gasquet's in the same boat with Harris.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of does. Gasquet traditionally goes on one of the big courts here as well.
Well, sure. Another face of French tennis.
Sure, Simon will go on maybe court two or three where it's a big audience too in case he's not back. So let's just do one more match before we maybe move on to the women's draw.
Yeah, let's do that.
One of your favorites.
Ooh.
Francis Tiafoe.
Oh, Jesus.
24th seed. Up against Bonzai in the first round. Can he win that one?
No.
You don't think he, on the clay, that he, you know, 24th seed, he can take out Bonzai, get himself a match against Goffin or Laheka in
no.
the second round? There's not a chance of a little run here?
I'm over Tiafoe. I think most people are. I think he's had a fine career. The United States Tennis Association have pumped lots of money into this kid, but he just hasn't delivered. He's very inconsistent. I can't put money on that kid ever. The only thing I can put money on is that when he retires, he'll probably end up in the booth. Outside of that, I can't do that. And Bonzai, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he's grown up on the surface. That much we do know, right? And no, I have no hopes for Francis Tiafoe at Roland Garros, at Wimbledon, at the U.S. Open. I have no faith in Francis Tiafoe at the Kmart Open, for that matter. He's too inconsistent. He's not put it all together. Maybe he will. I hope he does. But he can't take another shekel of my money.
So that brings us an interesting little point you said there. He'll, you know, perhaps end up in the booth. And as we move into the women's draw, somebody who has retired and ended up in the booth is Laura Robson.
Oh, that was one of your favorite players of all time. And I know you're excited to see that news.
Well, you know, she hasn't actually played a competitive match since at the tour level, where she's actually qualified on ranking for a tournament since about 2014. So the announcement last week of her retirement about 8 years later was something of a surprise probably to you and I and most of the tennis world who forgot that she played because, you know, she's a young lady. She didn't play for very long. And then she had a succession of injuries. I think, like, I could probably name the highlights of her career were the silver medal in the doubles playing with Andy Murray at London 2012. And when she beat Kim Clijsters in Kim Clijsters' first or second retirement match at the US Open.
That's right.
So, yeah, those are, you know, something to take away from that career. But it's interesting that there is a place in the booth for these people, despite the fact that a lot of them, Taylor Townsend, I'm looking at Taylor as well, have had relatively short careers that have not been particularly remarkable in terms of winning things in tennis. I mean, it's not like we're talking about one of the Williams sisters moving into the booth or... you know, somebody who's won Grand Slams or whatever. So it's quite quite interesting to me who does and who doesn't make it into the booth after the career, and when that opportunity opens up for them. But Miss Robson has been in the booth the last few years at Wimbledon and a couple of other places, so it'll be interesting to see if she pops up in that capacity over this summer again now that she's retired.
Oh, she will. And you know what? I had forgotten she even played, to be honest with you. And good luck to her.
Well,
Taylor,
it's not
Taylor
a,
Townsend.
Not a
by the way, Taylor Townsend made the first round of the She's in the first round of the tournament here, so that's interesting too. You know, when you talk about Taylor Townsend, though, she did have a baby, so she had to take some time off. I don't think Laura Robson has done that yet, but hats off to them all. You know what? If you can make a living in tennis, I don't care how you do it, and you can afford and you can feed your family based on what they pay you, then God bless you. You know, she obviously knows a little bit about tennis. She's played. I'm not so sure she's a very good presenter or commentator, but whatever. You know what? Maybe it'll be easier for her now that she's retired. Not that many actually remember her that are playing on the tour today. But you know what? Good for her. But Iga Świątek, that girl is on fire. She's won 28 consecutive matches. She drew a qualifier. She's an overwhelming favorite. She's a minus 119 favorite. The next, and to put context behind that, the next player below her is Simona Halep at 10-1. Oz Jabeur, 12-1. Paula Badosa, 18-1. Maria Sakkari, 18-1. Coco Gauff, 18-1. Sabalenka, 22-1. Osaka.
Hang on. Go back a sec.
Yes.
Coco Gauff is... No, Coco Gauff can't be on there before Osaka.
She's tied with Sakkari, too.
But how? Osaka's got like four Grand Slams.
Barbara Krejcikova is the defending champion, and she's 33-1.
Oh, she's not been playing particularly well, so I could...
Or playing at all, right?
Yeah, she's not got any form, so that's understandable. But I'm not seeing where Gauff's form brings her in line with Osaka. That's, for me, there's something not right on the pricing there.
She's in there with Sakkari and Badosa.
Yeah, that's, you know, she's not got any of that kind of pedigree whatsoever.
That's the wishful thinking crowd.
It's just that's a big step to go from...
second round losses to the finals.
Well, I was just about to say, how many times has Coco Gauff been in a final of a Grand Slam?
Or a final anywhere, for that matter. Maybe one or two times, right?
Right. I'm just trying to think. When, you know, Coco Gauff, when was the last time she got to the...
Second week of a major.
So, yeah, that's where I was going, the second week of a major. Because I think she reached the quarterfinals here last year, and that may be the only time she's ever reached the quarterfinals. I think she's been at the fourth round at Wimbledon, the fourth round at the Australian Open, but I don't think she's ever been past the quarterfinals of a major.
No, I don't think so. And I have a hard time seeing her doing that.
We're taking a big jump. I mean, she's won two titles. They were not particularly big titles, so this is a huge jump now. But she is at her highest, I think she's at her highest ranking at the minute. And I don't see it getting much higher based on performances, but it's a huge jump to suggest that she's going to win this.
And she's in the bottom half of this draw, too, and that bottom half is loaded. She's not going to get past some of these people. Let me see who she's playing. I have to scroll here.
She's got a qualifier first, I think.
Yeah, maybe so.
But I just don't see her as a favorable matchup against a lot of players. There's a lot of better clay court players out there. I'm just looking down the draw, and there's lots of names sticking out.
I'll tell you what, she could go somewhere, but she's going to see probably Muguruza or Kanepi in the third round if she makes it that far.
You know, good experienced players there.
No, she's got, you know, Coco has a pretty good draw, though, when you think about it. But then she's in the bottom half. And some of those names on the bottom half are Petra Kvitova, who's won a major or two. Emma Raducanu, a future billionaire. Belinda Bencic is in that side of the draw. Andreescu's in there. Anna Samova's in there. Osaka's in there. Sakkari's in there. And Barbara Krejcikova's in there. You've got players on that side of the draw who've won majors or have gotten to at least semifinals or finals.
Sloane Stephens is in there. She's won a major.
She has. Yes, she has. But she has.
She's playing a qualifier. She'll make it to the second round playing a qualifier.
Maybe she will.
Okay, we're not going to put the cart before the horse, sir.
No, I don't think we should either. Sloane Stephens, you know, she did pretty good in Mexico. Remember, she won that event.
Well, that's, you know, she's got a little bit of form there, so.
And she hasn't done anything since. You know, paying for that wedding and those photos must have been, and all the other things, I'm sure that was a pretty expensive task. You know, her husband plays for the United States men's national team, but they don't pay that much money. I never heard of them. So I think she's going to have to go out and win a couple matches at 100 Gs. But think about it this way. You make $100,000 to lose in the first round of a Grand Slam. That's not too bad.
It's good money if you can get it.
It's good money if you can get it, and she's getting it, and God bless her. But she ain't getting none of my financial support. That's for darn sure. I would be, look at this, I would be worried. And here's the fun part. If she wins that against that qualifier, and we don't know, she'll either take on Sorana Kirstia or Maria from Spain. So, I mean, you got a mess in your hands, Sloane. But I don't think it matters that much to her, really. She's just picking up paychecks. And then looming large, if she gets past the second round, is perhaps Barbara Krejcikova, who no one is talking about, who won this event. And that interests me. Now, what we got here, now, Emma Raducanu also drew a qualifier. And that'll be pretty good for her because she can rest a bit because she says she claims that she trains 12 hours a day. 12 hours a day, Craig.
Well, she's a busy girl. That's probably why she's not winning many matches, because she must be exhausted with all the training that she's doing.
I'd be exhausted from it too. But it seems to me
you've just been in the industry. How many people at your facility were training 12 hours a day?
I was lucky to see him training too.
Right,
and that includes two players who both have ATP rankings, but they're also coaches because you know they're at the bottom of the tier in that whole rung. And God bless them too for continuing to try. But no, who's training 12 hours a day? She's not training 12 hours a day. And if she is, she needs to cool it. But I wouldn't know who to tell that to because she's had so many coaches since the U.S. Open victory of hers, which was her Herculean, by the way. I didn't think I'd ever see a qualifier win a major, but she did. But she's had four coaches since then. One minute she says, I need someone to hold my hand and guide me through it. And the next minute she says, I got this. Okay, well, I got news for you. Whoever is backing her or whoever is telling her what they are telling her needs to probably be more of a silent partner in this, because that girl's a mess, and you can see it. Every time, now, she has this great draws, usually, or opening round draws, and that's cool for her. But she loses, she makes an excuse. She wins, and she raises her hand like a champion. And at some point, you have to wonder, when is it all going to come together for her? And some would say it already has because she won the U.S. Open, but I would counter with that she hasn't won anything since, or even come remotely close to winning anything since. What are your thoughts on her? She's from your world.
Oh, man. I think they've got a bigger problem in that a lot of coaches won't want to work with her because it seems that the arrangements are always very short term, so there's no stability for the coach. I think that their concept is that they're going to take on information from different coaches, absorb it, and then use it in some way. But I think you and I both know that there is actually such a thing as taking on too much information, particularly when you're getting conflicted and contrasting information from different people. I think sometimes you're better to go with just stability and go with what works, as in what she was doing at the US Open. Don't overload someone with all this technical information and things that are not actually getting results. Tennis is a results-based business, and you and I both know that. You've got to be on the tour, getting results to keep your ranking up, to stay on the gravy train effectively. If you're not in that top 50, then you're not getting invitations to all of the events all year round. So you're not bringing in the bacon, if you want to put it that way. So her ranking is good, but after the US Open, her ranking will not be good because she's not maximized on her opportunities to add ranking points to her current overall ranking. So she's heavily reliant on the US Open ranking points, which are going to drop off. So, yeah, like, she's got potential, but she's got to sort out this injury thing that's going on, these blisters and whatever else that are going on. She needs to become much more robust very, very quickly, because you don't want to slip out of the rankings and go back to needing handouts to get into tournaments. When you're up there, you need to stay there. If you don't stay there and you disappear, you don't come back. You ask Jeannie Bouchard. Jeannie Bouchard was up there for, 18 months. She slipped out there. Has she ever come back? No. And don't get me wrong, Jeannie Bouchard is a good tennis player. But for various reasons, and I'm sure a lot of them are related to off-the-court activities, whether it was magazine shoots or product endorsements and various other things, yeah, her game started to slide and she's never come back. And that's what Raducanu's got to be careful of, because if she slips out of the top 100, the endorsements and the sponsorships and the magazine shoots will all disappear. People ain't interested when you're not at the top of the game. The fact that she's got a slam might keep her on that train for a little bit longer, but at some point she's got to go back to playing tennis before the money train dries up.
Well, that's just it. And you know what? We wish her all the best. But I'm not putting any shekels on her either.
And you and I know that there's very few players can actually override the tennis spot. Even like some Maria Sharapova. When Maria Sharapova played, she was a top 10 player.
Yes.
Right?
A contender. So, a contender in every tournament she was in.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, we know she didn't have a good record against Serena Williams. She wasn't a good match with Serena Williams. But Sharapova, despite all the things that she'd gone on outside of tennis, was actually a top 10 player. And a lot of these other girls are not Maria Sharapova, unfortunately.
No, they're not. But Simona Halep is a 10-1 underdog here, or favorite, whatever it is. End of the day is, I don't think her new coaching situation is going to help her to overcome Iga Świątek, who she'll have to play probably in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what she's doing with the coaching setup. I actually thought she was better when she was with
Darren Cahill.
Darren Cahill, yeah. I was looking for the name. I was going to say she was with the Adidas coaching group, but Darren Cahill was with that as well. For whatever reason, she's moved on from there. Halep, she's had injury troubles, which is why she's ranked where she is in the seeding. But, yeah, I don't see her as being a contender to win this one. I think she might actually get to that quarterfinal against Świątek. But let's be honest, right? If anyone wins this apart from Świątek, it's going to be a big surprise.
That could be true. I think it might be a surprise if Halep gets past Anna Konja in the first round. I think that could be an upset there, depending on what the price is on that. And I haven't looked yet. That could be the case. Świątek, she drew a qualifier, and then she has the winner of Pittsburgh's own, Alison Risk. I heard about throughout my short time in Pittsburgh was Alison Risk. Well, she takes on Diana Yastremska from the Ukraine. That ought to be interesting. The Halep match to me is interesting. This Ostapenko, now, this is the one I think has a shot, too. At maybe doing some damage. I don't know that the odds makers agree with me. Yeah, she's 50-1 to win it. That might be it. Who else can get in there? Naomi Osaka, she's 33-1. That's a girl with four majors. And she get no respect at all from the odds, from the odds makers. But then again, does she deserve any?
She's not been playing frequently enough to suggest that she's got form. Like, if she does okay here, that price will tumble for Wimbledon. Some people might want to jump on her here, see if they can get a bit of value out of her.
To win?
But, yeah, why not? Like, she's won Grand Slams, and she's not just won the one. She comes out here and she has a good couple of rounds, and then that price will drop significantly. If she starts winning 6-2, 6-1, things like that, that the price is going to drop really, really quickly. So it's a gamble because the form's not there, but the history's there. And you just think, like, yeah, you know, if she gets to the final and she's playing against Swiatek, why not? You know, why not? She's going to be a dog, but I would think it's a pretty good shout.
Maybe so. Anja Jabeur is a good shout, too. She's got an interesting first-round match with Lynette, but Anja Jabeur is 12-1 to win
this
event.
Very, very steady player. She's going to be there or thereabouts come the end as well.
And her draw is nice, by the way, I must say.
Yeah, no, she's very steady player on all surfaces, so, you know, this might be her time. I like her. I like her as a player.
Andreescu's got a shot, too. She opens with a qualifier, as does Belinda Bencic, and they could meet in the second round. That's another... See, people aren't talking about that, though, but that is another issue right there. Look at that. Andreescu's a nice player. And Bencic? Bencic is like on the rise until she started doing modeling, and then that kind of went to hell. But Bencic is, let me see where she at. She's a 40-1 long shot to win this thing. And I think she's got a better chance than some of these girls.
She's never won a slam, right? That's where the pricing comes from. There's been no evidence that she can get it over the line. So Andreescu, of course, has won a slam. So, yeah, you've got a little bit of an interesting match in that second round. Obviously, Andreescu's had a lot of horrific injury since she won that US Open. That's kind of set her back a little bit. Difficult matchup. I think Bencic will probably win that one, but it's certainly not a guarantee.
Yeah, but Anna Samova might take out Osaka right off the bat.
She very much could.
I think she can beat her at least 5 out of 10 times.
Yeah, I mean, Osaka's not, as we said, she's not got a lot of form behind her. What both girls are probably looking at as well, though, is that if you win, you're playing a qualifier. So that's kind of like having a breather a little bit after getting through that first round, because that's a really intense first round matchup.
Yeah, but look what happens for them when they, one of those two, if they make it to the third round, they're going to probably have to play Sakkari.
And again, tough matchup.
Tough matchup.
Really tough matchup.
Hey,
go ahead. Not one that Sakkari will be looking at and thinking, this looks good for me either. You know,
right.
And thinking, oh, you know, this is not the best part of the draw. Week one, and you got to play Osaka or Anna Samova.
Yeah, that's not good. Let me see who else. You know, Kontaveit. And that Kontaveit, let me see where she's at here. I thought I saw her. Where is she?
She's in the bottom section playing against Tomla Janovic.
Yeah, I got that one, but she's 40-1. Tomljanović is pretty decent player, and I think that could be an upset waiting to happen. You know, you don't discount that girl. Tomljanović is a tough player. I like her a lot. Let's see who else here is interesting before we call it a day. Again, we will be now this match here, Kai Kanepi versus Muguruza. That could only be interesting if Muguruza lets the crowd get to her.
Yeah, I think Kanepi's maybe starting to get to that point where she's past the point of too many big upsets. I don't see her as being a player who's going to probably be there second week. It's hard to say, but I think she's past her best now.
Oh,
I think we'll probably see similar for, there's quite a few players I'm looking at the first round, and I can just see them getting knocked out straight away. I was just flicking down there past Lauden Davis. She just usually makes the numbers up. The matchup between, where was it? It was just under the one where I was looking at. Yeah, Azarenka against Bogdan. I thought that could be an interesting one.
Yes.
I'm not sure how much I'm backing Azarenka at the minute. Really not sure if I would put money on Azarenka winning that one. I might play against Azarenka there.
I might do that too. We'll have to wait and see for sure. Now, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about before we call this a day. Let me see which is the one. Jessica Pegula.
Jessica Pegula, yes.
You know what? This is the type of surface and this is the type of event that she could really come out through. She's one of the few rich kids I've ever met who works her ass off and succeeds at tennis because she wanted to succeed at tennis. You know, she doesn't have to succeed at tennis, but she's done so anyway. And she's up there in that nightmare top half. You know, that's not going to be fun for them. You got Shelby Rogers in there. Danielle Collins is in there. Taylor Towns is in there. Madison Keys is in there. They're getting rid of all the Americans early here, I think. I think it's a conspiracy, maybe. Now I'm starting to sound like the Twitter people. She's taking on Bijou. Oh, I'm sorry. That's incorrect. I'm looking at that wrong. Pegula takes on Wang. First round. That might get dicey. You're looking at an over here. That's another thing. If you're playing the French Open and you're betting on it, look for overs in this one. Look for a lot of long grinding sets. And also, time on court matters here more than anywhere else. How many hours these kids spend on the court makes a difference on the dirt. But Pegula has it. You know, she has a nice little draw here. She could make it to the quarterfinals, maybe.
Yeah, she could. I mean, let's see how it transitions.
80 to 1, I think she is, too. What is she? 50 to 1, like she's just below Emma Raducanu. At 40 to 1.
And she's probably got a lot better chance of winning than Emma Raducanu.
I would think so, too. Minus you know, sans the excuses.
I like Pegula. She's a hard worker. I'm not going to like the Buffalo Bills. That's
no,
not gonna happen.
Never.
But I do like Jessica Pegula. Maybe a good outside chance if you want to try someone who hasn't won a slam but has good pedigree, then maybe that's the one to play.
Maybe that's the one to play. Oh, that sounds great to me. This was a good time as always, my friend. It's good to have this show back. It's good to be hanging with you again. I tell you what, man, what a tournament. We'll have picks over at BetStamp for sure. You're going to have to pay for them. We didn't give you anything today except we gave you a lot. Use it and hopefully you profit from it. BetStamp.app is where you find us. Look for This Week in Tennis or just click the link inside the show notes. You can find Craig over at CD Sports Media. I suggest that you do. And if you are in need of a photographer, Craig is the best one out there. You should pick up his work. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this one. Until next time, he's Craig Doyle. I'm Phil Nasons. Thanks for listening to This Week in Tennis.
This Week in Tennis.